You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, May 8th, 2017.
There have been some past initiatives in our community that started with pre-prescribed agendas, and that didn't go over well because the voice of the community was not necessarily heard.
In today's WFHB Community Report, the Brown County Redevelopment Commission's Tina Beatty talks about a state initiative that's helping Brown County create local development projects. That's coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from a volunteer with the Center for Women's Ministries. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Donald Trump is threatening to increase taxes on a company that is moving jobs out of Indianapolis. The manufacturer, Rexnord, is moving 350 jobs out of the city to Monterrey, Mexico, where workers will reportedly be paid $3 per hour. In a tweet last night, Trump wrote that the company should be taxed, quote, big, on its products sold in the U.S. Trump has made similar threats to companies in the past. After similar comments about the company, Carrier, Trump later arranged for the state of Indiana to give the company $7 million in tax breaks in exchange for Carrier keeping some jobs in Indianapolis. Since then, the CEO of Carrier's parent company, Greg Hayes, has said that many of the jobs saved in the deal will eventually be phased out through automation.
Indiana's bicentennial projects are costing Hoosiers more than former Governor Mike Pence promised. That's according to a new report from the Associated Press. Plans to pay for the projects have fallen apart, leaving the legislature to allocate $5.5 million for those costs in the recently signed state budget. The projects include the construction of a new plaza outside the State House and upgrades to the state library. Pence had proposed paying for the bicentennial projects with money generated by leasing out 340 state-owned cell towers. He also suggested raising money through a plan in which the company, Agile Networks, would expand high-speed internet access to rural areas. Neither of those plans worked, leaving lawmakers this year to look for another way to meet those costs. The plaza has already been constructed and the library has been upgraded. Republican Senator Luke Kinley, who helped write the bill, reportedly told the AP lawmakers had no other choice. Quote, they did the work, so somebody had to pay for it, unquote. Other bicentennial projects are on shaky ground. There have been plans to construct a new state archives building, as well as an inn at Potato Creek State Park, but those plans may be on hold. In total, Pence had planned more than $53 million in bicentennial projects.
A City of Bloomington press release announced that May is National Bikes Month. To celebrate biking, the city's Planning and Transportation Department will be working with Monroe County Government, IU's Bicycle Program, and the Monroe County Library to provide several special events. One upcoming event is on Wednesday, May 10th, a 6 to 7 mile historic district bike ride that will visit seven local historic districts with breaks to learn about them. Another is a bike to work day and block party on Friday, May 19th. Participants are encouraged to bike to work, swing by three encouragement stations from 7:30 to 10 a.m., the Beeline near Dodds on the Courthouse Square or near Sample Gates, and to attend a block party from 4 to 7 p.m. on Grant Street between Kirkwood Avenue and 6th Street to enjoy food and celebrate. More information can be found by visiting bloomington.in.gov/bike.
This year is the 25th anniversary of the nationwide Stamp Out Hunger food drive. On Saturday, May 13th, the National Association of Letter Carriers, Branch 28, will work with the Hoosier Hills Food Bank to collect food for those in need. Residents are encouraged to leave any non-perishable food donations by their mailboxes or at the end of their driveways so postal workers can collect them. The effort is expected to provide contributions to more than 100 partner agencies that serve over 25,000 Hoosiers each year. The executive director of the Hoosier Hills Food Bank, Julio Alonzo, set this year's goal at 50,000 pounds of food, far more than last year's collection of over 39,000 pounds. In a press release, Alonzo said, quote, "The food drive is one of the easiest ways people can support us, and it's also our single most important," unquote. Pickup volunteers are still needed. For more information, call 812-334-8374 or email volunteer@hhfoodbank.org.
Bloomington residents are happy with the city's available entertainment, cultural activities, and sense of community, but upset about parking, homelessness, and a lack of affordable housing. That's according to the results of a survey conducted by the city government. The city hired the National Research Center to conduct the survey, which was distributed to 3,000 randomly selected households. 595 people completed the survey. Of those respondents, 27% said what they liked best about Bloomington are the cultural activities and entertainment. 16% said they most valued the sense of community, with some describing the city as friendly and diverse. When asked what they least liked about Bloomington, 22% mentioned issues related to traffic, mobility, or parking. But the largest percentage mentioned issues related to housing. 18% cited a lack of affordable housing in the city, and another 16% specifically mentioned homelessness. Almost 70% of survey participants said they would strongly support the city helping provide housing to people experiencing homelessness. About 25% said they would somewhat support that kind of assistance, and only 6% said they would oppose it. The city government has provided funding for shelters in the past, including $350,000 last year for the Friends Place Emergency Shelter. But city administrators have not been supportive of efforts to support to establish a year-round low-barrier facility which would provide emergency shelter to anyone, including intoxicated people. There is currently a low-barrier shelter operated by churches during the winter, but the only consistently functioning summer shelter was shut down in 2012. During an interview on Friday, Mayor John Hamilton said he still doesn't know whether the local government should be involved in establishing a year-round low-barrier shelter. Hamilton took questions from WFHB News Director Joe Crawford.
Should the city have some sort of low-barrier shelter something so that we don't have people who are actually sleeping outside in the city?
You know, it's a tragedy person by person when we have individuals and families and kids who are homeless in our community, and I feel that every day. We have a very active downtown safety, civility, and justice task force that is wrestling with these issues. How do we best respond? So absolutely, yes, it's a concern, and we are working closely together. You know, I think the question of emergency beds versus permanent housing is one that there's a debate about among different people. I tend to lean on the side of permanent housing as the solution, which is not easy to do, but it tries to say emergency beds are for emergencies, but we really need to think about how do we get people into sustainable shelter over time. And that's, again, like Crawford 1.0 and Crawford 2.0 are exactly that, to try to get the most at-risk people off the streets, and we're working on that.
So just to be clear, you're not saying that we should have a year-round publicly run shelter where even if you're drunk, you can go?
The city needs to work very closely, which is what we're doing, with the nonprofit social service providers who are doing great work. And I think any increase in emergency beds, for example, which of course would take resources, needs to be a part of an overall strategy that says, how are we moving people into housing, not just emergency housing, but a sustainable housing? And if we have a plan to do that, and I think that plan is underway, there's a draft that's been around for little while, actually. But if we have a plan to do that, then I think we should, any option should be on the table.
That was Mayor John Hamilton speaking about the city government's response to homelessness. Besides homelessness, housing, and parking, participants in the city survey also voiced complaints about a lack of jobs and low wages, among other issues. When listing elements of the city they like best, respondents also mentioned trails, parks, and accessibility. Overall, 82% of Bloomington respondents said their quality of life is good or excellent, which the researchers say is similar to other cities around the country. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Last week, the Indiana Office of Community and Rural Affairs named Brown County as a finalist in its Hometown Collaboration Initiative. The goal of the Hometown Collaboration Initiative, or HCI, is to coach local teams on data gathering and developing strategies that will ultimately lead to broad-based support for and success of local development initiatives. The HCI program is a partnership with the Indiana Office of Community and Rural Affairs, the Indiana Communities Institute at Ball State University, and Purdue University's Center for Regional Development. Reporter Sarah Vaughn spoke with Tina Beatty of the Brown County Redevelopment Commission to learn more about the multi-phase initiative and what it means for Brown County.
The Indiana Office of Community and Rural Affairs announced that Brown County has been selected as a finalist in the Hometown Collaborative Initiative. So can you explain what the initiative is about and what this means for Brown County?
For us, what we see this as is an opportunity for a group of interested citizens in our county to be able to come together and learn from professionals from both Purdue and Ball State on several areas of how to pull and extract data and information from their community and how to assess that data to understand what that information is telling them as far as what are the needs for their community. And in parallel to that, figure out, you know, how to do stakeholder assessments, how to gather the voice of their stakeholders in their community, and kind of how to look at that information aligned with the data that they extract from the work that they collect to determine what are the real needs of their community, where is the community seeing real positive benefits, where are their concerns, and where are their opportunities to make good improvements.
Well, each applicant was required to give a 90-minute presentation, I understand. So in your presentation, what were you emphasizing about Brown County's needs or its potential?
Well, we've been very adamant about not pre-prescribing specifically what our needs are. The purpose is not to come in with any preconceived ideas, but rather use the time and the information that people are collecting, the team, the HCI team, when they actually begin this process to determine that. What we did was focus on sharing with the Okra, Purdue, and Ball State representatives what's happened in the community in the past. We shared some successes that we've had in the community in the past. We shared some, I don't know if I'd want to call them failures, but maybe not so successful attempts to pull the community together and share our ideas on why we didn't think those were successful. What are our community value indicators saying? These are the common standard metrics the state has defined to look at how is your community doing from a healthy metrics perspective. So it talks about school and population and income, et cetera. So our basis was to say, if you look at the CVIs, we do have kind of a declining trend in several of them. What concerns us as citizens to say, how do we become a sustainable community? So we love our community, we love our area, we love our county, but the question is, are we sustainable to maintain it at least at the way it is? We're not looking for any kind of substantial change in how the community operates. What we're looking for is to ensure it can stay healthy and sustainable.
And these HCI team members, who are they and where do they come from?
They are all coming from our community, our county. Within the HCI application process, there are recommendations on how you pull your team together, And there's some diversity targets that they recommend as well. So what we did is we came up with originally about, I think it was 35 or 40 names of people that met those diversity targets. So we actually had a matrix on the wall, and we were trying to ensure that we didn't get too heavy in one area, for example, business people, or too heavy in another area.
So it's my understanding that there are several phases in the Hometown Collaboration Initiative. And are you now looking at choosing one of the HCI building blocks of economy, leadership, or placemaking? What's your next step?
We are working with that HCI team. We've come up with a few more information sessions so that we can take some deep dives into any of the past studies that have been done in the community, et cetera, with that team, so that when the Purdue and Ball State representatives that are assigned to us are ready to kick off, they, our HCI team members, will have as much background information as possible so that they have a starting point.
They mentioned there's these three building blocks of economy, leadership, or placemaking that can be acted upon to strengthen the communities that are finalists. And I'm just wondering if there's a specific goal or idea that you have that falls under one of these three, quote, building blocks that you're hoping to end up at.
No, we actually don't have any specific ideas, and we've cautioned against that. We have strongly cautioned against that in all the HCI information sessions we held. And one of the reasons we've done that is there have been some past initiatives in our community that started and kicked off with pre-prescribed agendas, and that didn't go over well in the community because the voice of the community was not necessarily heard or listened to. So our whole intent with this program is twofold. One is to train up a group of citizens who want to help and improve their community with the skills to how to collaborate well with their citizens within their community so they're representing their community. And parallel to that, helping them understand how to do data assessment. So we're not making choices or decisions based on emotion, but we're actually making those choices and decisions based on data that we've actually pulled, assessed, reviewed, and agreed upon. So the combination between the voices and the data should show us where the big needs are and where we can start working on what they call a pilot project. I'm probably using the wrong term for it, but the third phase of the HCI initiative is to actually a capstone project. That's the correct name. In that third phase is when you would launch a capstone project, but that capstone project isn't launched until all of the assessment is done up front to determine where's the best place and what area would be the best. So we don't know if we're going to do, I think there's three areas. There's leadership, economic, and placemaking. And we, at this point, of course, have no clue where we're going to end up until after we do that foundation phase assessment.
Just to get a sense of the time frame, I know you've said you don't have a goal or a specific capstone project in mind, but when do you think the team will be entering into the capstone project phase?
You know, it's very hard to tell because one of the flexibilities they give you is to be able to set your pace. So the HCI team can set their pace along with their coach that will be coming from Purdue or Ball State. So it is going to depend on the team. If the team wants to do this aggressively, they're going to get through it a bit faster. It can be anywhere from 12 to 24 months in length to get all the way through the execution of the capstone project. But again, it'll depend on how fast a pace that our particular team wants to go at. We're extremely excited, and I have to say the excitement has grown over time. Our team, once they began to form and they started collaborating and they started reading the drafts of the application, they got more and more excited. So we've had a couple little celebrations now. We had one when we were made semifinalists and then one last Thursday when we were finalists. And you can just see the excitement building in that group. So as the person kind of leading, getting this whole application together, it's just been fun to watch as they initially just came to information sessions, and now you just see the excitement that they're all having about this.
That was reporter Sarah Vaughn speaking with Tina Bayday of the Brown County Redevelopment Commission. Brown County has been selected to participate in the Hometown Collaboration Initiative through the Indiana Office of Community and Rural Affairs.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003. And on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithfield Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithfield's home automation service is available at smithfieldsecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
Hi, my name is Riova Meredith, and I volunteer with the Center for Women's Ministries. In my mid-50s, I was really struggling in my own personal life, and I needed a counselor, so I went to counseling. And out of that whole thing, the Lord sort of impressed upon me that there's a whole world of women that needs counseling because there's emotional and spiritual issues that need to be developed in their lives that are not already there. And I left my profession 3 years before retirement, but I felt like I needed to go then and establish what we have named the Center for Women's Ministries. We started it right here in this community, and now we are on we have a presence on 5 of the 7 continents. We're not in Australia yet, and we're not in Antarctica. We have about somewhere around 40 centers now, and we've been at this for 28 years. It's pretty exciting, and I'm just as excited about what is going on today as I was when we cut the ribbon on the first center over on Goerlie Pike. And I have worked as a volunteer all those years. I've not gotten a paycheck. I just celebrated my 80th birthday, and I received so many affirmations that I don't have any regrets. You know, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I walked away from the classroom, even though I loved what I was doing. But somebody said, Riova, you have touched more lives than you could ever have touched from a classroom. And I thought, that was sweet. I know my sister used to say, Riova, you will step out where angels would fear to trot. So, and you do have to, you know, anybody that steps out, whether it's, you know, from the spiritual standpoint or whether it's they're stepping out to start up a business, there's risks involved. And you have to be willing to, you know, to take the risks and willing for failure to come. I think the thing that I'd like to say is if you feel inspired to step out into a what you would call a risky area, just take the risk and do it, you know, because that's the way that success comes, and that's the way that other lives are changed. I mean, it cost us something when we step out. Anybody that has made an impact on your life, they've paid a price for that. And you know, even though I might have been able to have followed what my dream was, I know at this stage, I wouldn't have the same sense of satisfaction and accomplishment, whatever that means. I'm very thankful that I did it. Very thankful. Thanks for listening. I'm Riova Meredith, the founder and executive director of the Center for Women's Ministry internationally.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with 3 featured volunteer opportunities for the week. The challenge is on for all teens entering or currently in high school. Can you contribute to a summer of service goal of 1,000 hours logged by teen volunteers during the 10 weeks of summer from May 30th through August 8th? Teens can transform their summer into a summer of service by registering now at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org/summer-of-service. And speaking of summer volunteering, volunteering at Global Gifts is a fun and rewarding experience that helps spread the mission of fair trade in our community and beyond. New volunteers are welcome to find out more at their upcoming volunteer orientation on May 28th at 5:30 p.m. And kick off summer with National Trails Day on Saturday, June 3rd. Volunteers will help maintain Griffey Lake Nature Preserve between 9 a.m. and noon, and volunteers age 16 and older are welcome to participate. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford and Kathy Norton. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programs, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.